Well, it's not.
No, it is.
No, it isn't.
It just rang, didn't it?
It did, but the person got scared.
You can't be too cynical about the phone. You have to love the phone. You have to embrace it.
And I really don't like
it.
He started to wanted to grab it, right?
Yeah,
yeah, like you let it ring. Sure.
Here, how's this? I'm stroking the phone. Is this ever so nice and gently? Sort of like, see what happens if the darn thing just lights up, you know?
Okay, just be a little more patient.
There it is. Yeah, just
like, I'm really enjoying this. I'd like to say I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah,
not every week, just once every 4 years.
Oh, it's a new, every once every 4 years.
Yeah.
Michael, sit over here.
Can't, is there a call there?
There is a call. Okay. Does this person wish to speak to his imminence?
Imminent, not imminent.
Okay, your impotency.
Caller.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I can't hear you through my phone. I guess I have to listen to the radio.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It just turned up.
Did you have anything from LaRouche earlier?
We're going to have part two of Bob Marshall's interview with him at 2:05 on Ken's show.
10:50?
Yeah, half hour.
And what about the guy from Chicago? What's his name?
Scully.
Yeah. Can I have some stuff from him?
Yeah, he'll be on right at 2 o'clock. He's always on right at 2 o'clock. Which reminds me, you know Spy Magazine?
Yeah.
Yeah. Their new issue, July 1990 issue, has a big article on the Mae Brussels Research Center, Dave Emery, Mae Brussels, Sherman Skolnick.
John, oh, it does?
Yeah, and it's all there. Kent was so excited he brought me in a copy, assuming that I had no influence in putting it out, but I knew and I had a copy, but he's going to give it to Wynn Morris or somebody. But check out the Spy Magazine.
Spy Magazine, July 1990.
Yeah, it's right on the stands now, and you'll be amazed that they publicize the drama of the Mae Brussels Research Center. Of course, they take a couple of shots, but maybe that's their cover operation. Well, it is. I know. I told them, right? But so they won't be considered too serious, but they get the information out to you, subgenii, who can know what the story is really about, right?
Now, didn't you guys have an interview with some sort of prophet guy?
Yeah, we just played the Exus. We call him the Exus. And we just played the Exus. He was prophesying and predicting the fate of Meech Lake. Didn't you just hear that 10 minutes
ago?
Yeah,
I did. Okay, I was wondering if that was LaRouche or not.
No, that's the Exus. They're from the constellation Bootes. You know, that's where we're going to have our first contact with extraterrestrial intelligence.
Now, what about the medium I heard a few weeks ago?
That's the Exus. The Exus come through a medium.
Okay, but I know there's, on the show after 2 o'clock, they played a medium as well.
Yes, that was the Exus as well.
What do we play there?
I was playing the Future of Toronto.
Yeah, that actually what you heard tonight in Meech Lake is from the April 11th Exus press conference on the Future of Toronto.
From the press conference.
Yeah, it's the same thing. I just played a particular little excerpt, you know, to celebrate what happened on June 22nd, you know, that Canada disappeared again.
Okay.
And what, there was something else? Is there anything that we have to tell this person? Use your psychic ability, Mike. Do you know about the Barbara Honecker tape?
No, I don't.
Okay. Ask Kent to play it sometime because George Bush...
Will you play it sometime?
Yes, I will.
Because the CIA guy who did the interview over 33 L.A. stations in September 88 to influence the Bush election, actually to stop Bush... This former CIA person has been identified, and we have a new guest.
Yes, we have a new guest.
Caller, we just have a redhead locked in.
Yes.
This person's not sure who is Bob.
This is Charles.
Oh, you know this person, Ken?
Yes, I do.
Oh, for your show?
I'm not sure. He's just coming in here because he needs slack and, you know.
Look, he's looking at his eye. Ooh.
He's receptive.
Caller, we're having a discharge
revival.
Right here with you, caller. I think we'll have to give you credit. And Mike's never been able to look through my papers, and he's sitting here looking through my papers, you know, and he sees that, yes, by gosh, the show is scripted.
I think we should take another call.
Mike is taking over. Call. What did you want to know? You just want to know who these people's voices were, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, great. Well, Skolnick, if you ever want to call him yourself, 312-731-1100.
Is that his response line?
Yeah, that's where you get the messages.
Oh, well, now, how did you guys ever get permission to, like, broadcast his line?
Well, I know him personally. He works with me.
Get out of here, really?
Yeah, and Bob Marsh used to play him back in 84 and 85, 86, 87 on International Connection. He's been an old standby CKLN.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like a private radio station. He has a phone system, It's computerized, so it has 20 inputs. You call in. If someone else has already called in and triggered off the message, you get to hear the message at that point. But the computer knows that you came in late and will replay the message for you. But the caller that triggered off, if they did before you, they will be disconnected after they heard the whole message.
Now, what I want to know is who is funding him?
Nobody. He's on welfare. He's a cripple. And,
get out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah, he can afford 20 phone lines.
Well, once you put it in, he might have a few people, but I visited him in 1988, and he's not living in any extravagant, luxurious situation, and he's very poor. He did have his parents did give him a some little trust, which was stolen, which was ripped off in '63, and that's what got him into studying the corruption in the Chicago courts, because his parents lost the trust that set up for him. So he started investigating, and he became a major figure in Chicago in '69. He was even in Time magazine in '69, and then by '71 he started exposing the CIA intelligence control of the media itself, rather than he was just exposing the court corruption and the bureaucratic corruption. And once he started to expose the media content corruption, the control of it, they wouldn't allow him on the media anymore. So in 1971, he started this phone service. And this has been going, next year will be 20 years he's been doing this.
Now, why don't they have someone like this in Toronto? Why do we have to listen to this guy from Chicago?
Well, you ask the Canadians that. Have the Canadians ever done anything original?
Well, I don't know, but I understand.
You don't know. See, they may have, but we don't know, right?
Well, I understand you guys are being monitored by CSIS, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we're monitored. I mean, I told them to monitor Bob Marshall. You see, there's two people we're dealing with. There's Bob Marshall and there's me, Bob Dobbs.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob Marshall promoted Sherman Skolnick, Dr. Beter, Mae Brussels, and the Executive Intelligence Review, which is LaRouche's organization. And then Bob Dobbs promotes a wider, more comprehensive perceptual view. The Bob Marshall operation is called Who's Forgotten Furry Lint, which is based on what happened to Larry Flint during the election campaign in 1984. And the Bob Dobbs is based on the theatrical drama called Hand Signals for the Blind. This is the longest running theater performance piece in Toronto. It's been going for 6 years now, here in CKLN.
Now, don't you guys worry what the intelligence community might do to you guys?
No. We know that they could kill you. Well, they could kill us any time they want. You can't stop it. So what's there to worry about? You know, when we're looking forward to death. Not that we worship death, but I'm not afraid of death. I mean, death is going to be fun.
My phone line might be traced now. Right now.
What'd you say?
My phone line could be traced right now.
Yeah, but are you afraid of dying?
Yes.
Oh, okay. You need to listen to this show a little longer. You need to get some more slack. It's healthy to be afraid. I mean, don't run into it. You know, don't want it. But when you die, you won't even know you're dead. You'll just be... What will we say? You'll just be... dreaming.
The absence of living.
Yeah, you'll be dreaming.
Yeah, like, do you remember yourself before you lived?
Yeah, you do when you dream. So you die every night when you go to sleep. You go unconscious, you can't control it. You could have a heart attack while you're asleep. You couldn't control it. So you die every night, you go unconscious.
Well, I think I'm afraid of living, too.
Well, it's wise to be like that today. You know, you should be afraid of living because most of it's toxic.
Is it?
Yeah.
Those 11 time zones again.
Half of 22.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
It was a sobering phone call.
Yes. Interesting semi-wall-like response, you know, like not taking us, not humoring us, confronting us.
Yeah. I guess he wasn't interested in the rhubarb jam recipe, and let's hold on to that.
If we have another caller, would you like to take it there, Squire Bob?
Sure, he's so polite.
Isn't it revolting?
We can tell he's fallen asleep.
CKLN.
It's almost the witching hour. I'd just like to say that the elementals are taking care of Bob. Bob is being looked after, and those assassins who think that it is easy to get Bob, beware.
Yeah, Ray, did you ever see the movie or read the book Slaughterhouse 5 by Kurt Vonnegut?
Mm-hmm.
You ever see that? Well, if you remember, the guy knew when he was going to die, and he just acted out his role in life, so that's my situation.
Sure. Yeah,
I mean, I know when I'm going to die, so, you know, it's just going to happen. But it'll be so perfect up to that point.
You're also thousands of years old.
Those who would attempt it are just going to blow their cover.
That's right.
Into outer space and all over the planet.
Hello, Mark.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, first of all, about...
That's Kent improvising, right?
Kent improvising.
Yeah, so I appreciate you, comforting us.
I would just like to add a point to our drug war, the schmuck war.
Oh, listen, Ray, this ain't scripted, but we got an incredible excerpt coming up about the drug war. You ever
I just wanted to just give us a little piece from the death of ignorance from our Californian friends.
Is that a book?
This is a drug structural comparison chart. LSD and other hallucinogens are thought to enhance the activity of norepinephrine and dopamine while inhibiting the depressing effects of serotonin. Information coming through the reticular activating system, the diffuse network of neurons in the brainstem that regulates consciousness, is diffused, causing an alteration in the perception of time on the physical plane. This inhibition then causes a bombardment of the cerebral cortex of energies from higher planes to move its focus from the subconscious memory to the conscious mind. I guess it's just dreaming awake again, Bob. Should go back to sleep, right? I think that all of this expansion should start contracting again, kiddies. And all this diethylamide is bad for you. Like, sure, lysergic acid is from the plant kingdom, but diethylamide is made in a lab. And we weren't made in no lab. We're not robotoids, are we? Why would we want to do synthetics that turn our minds into a labyrinth? I once did an astral plane journey into diethylamide and discovered that it was just a big maze anyways. Why would I want to live in a maze?
Yeah, that's amazing.
Why would anybody want to live in a maze?
Amazing. You know, Ray, LSD is the inner trip via and parallel to the movie experience and the cartoon experience, whereas heroin is the TV making electric experience because it puts on the whole universe immediately.
Mm-hmm.
That's what heroin does. That's why heroin is more popular than LSD. It lasted longer as a sensory preference.
Well, opium is the original, right?
Yeah. Whatever it is, as opposed to LSD, which gives you dreams that money can buy in cartoon form. Heroin doesn't give you any dreams. It just puts you...
saying that lysergic acid is necessarily bad, but I just had all these bad experiences with this diethylamide that they blended into it. It's this semi-organic reality.
Well, do you want to go back to that escargot? The ergo?
Oh, well, just for purple moons, Bob.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we're still part shamans here.
Well, Ray, we're talking drugs. I want to play something now. See, if we're being perceived as frivolous, then we got to put some hard facts on again. Okay, now there's a new author named Michael Levine, former DEA agent who rose to the top of the cocaine cartels. Well, I don't need to introduce it anymore, but he's got a book out. Now, Ken, have you got that tape? Which one?
Everything is all...
The one with the Michael Levine. Yeah, that with the Michael Levine, the right side. So what this, Ray, this is April 23rd, 1990. Michael Levine was interviewed on the National Public Broadcasting Network, PBS in the States.
Yes.
And on the McNeil Era Report.
It's quite 17.
Yeah, it's quite interesting what he had to say right there on national, maybe international, satellite TV. What he had to say about his experience behind his new book called Deep Cover. And he confirms what Bob has said and what Bob Dobbs has said, what Bob Marshall said, that the Pentagon is dope incorporated. All right? So just check out, just listen to this, Ray. And
I've been taking my college course, Bob, and those who are ready, go to Bob and get your college courses.
Yeah. You know, what is it? A BA is... And then... Then you got MA... What is it?
MA.
MA.
BSc.
BSc. Well, we know what BS is.
MA. PhD.
PhD is Bob piled higher and deeper, right? Right? Isn't that the way it goes, Mike? This is BS, MS.
And escalating.
Yeah, BS,
exponential.
MS is more of the same,
doesn't turn off.
And then PhD is probably higher and deeper. Yeah, I think we got that across.
Let's go to this tape.
Okay, so this tape is serious, about 5 minutes, I guess. And,
so anyways, just be careful. Don't be cautious, kiddies. Like,
but Ray, you start off telling us not to worry about that person telling us to be cautious. Now you tell us to be cautious, Ray.
Of course, because we're multidimensional.
That's right. We're going in all directions at once, aren't we? Every move, every statement is your next. So the thing is about this, imagine this is being broadcast on the pink media.
Oh, of course. And I mean,
not us, but this PBS thing coming up.
Yeah, but I mean, they're listening, Bob. I keep hearing evidence of it. They're using all your lingo all over the radio. Right?
Yeah, like Philip Marchand, you know, the book reviewer, or Arthur Croker.
I heard it on CFRB.
Brian Fawcett. You see his book, Public Eye, you know, on the disappearance, an investigation into the disappearance of the world. I mean, they're not even well done, these books, but certainly are influenced by Bob's work.
Yeah, this poor plagiarism, Bob.
Well, Ray, at least you're following it and noticing it, and one person is doing it. Someone's got to do it. You're doing it. Thank you, Ray.
Yeah, we've got to have our agents everywhere.
Yeah.
Keep working, guys. And girls.
You like the idea of the woman's corner?
Oh, it's amazing. I would like to suggest that we could substitute our sugar for honey and support the apiculturists.
Substitute honey into...
Yeah, honey for sugar.
All right, okay.
Because, you know, we're solar. Honey is a solar product.
Yeah,
Bob.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay, that's Ray's first men's corner
pleasant
alternative recipe. Thank you, Ray.
Pleasant dreams.
Nice.
Good feeling, yeah.
Mike has taken over.
I hope you're watching all the videos, but, like, turn it off sometimes because we need media ecology.
You don't need to watch TV with it turned on, right, Ray? You like that idea?
Yeah.
If your parents are getting mad at you for watching TV without it turned on, you tell them Bob said so.
Turn that thing on.
Well, I'm listening to the TV.
Turn it on.
Electromagnetic.
The new parental slogan. Turn it on.
Frequency radiation, Mama.
Okay, Ray, we had 400 other calls. Okay,
yeah.
So here's a call from PBS to Bob, confirming Bob.
Psychotronic.
Michael Levine's 25-year career has taken him deep into the bowels of the drug world. As a highly praised undercover agent for the Drug Enforcement Agency, Levine has posed as a heroin smuggler in Thailand, a cocaine buyer in Buenos Aires, and a gun runner in Buffalo. Before his retirement in December, Levine specialized in South and Central America, where he is known as El Tiburon, the shark. The 50-year-old agent turned author after his retirement in December. His book, Deep Cover, is billed as the inside story of how DEA infighting, incompetence, and subterfuge lost us the biggest battle of the drug war. Mr. Levine, thank you for joining us. The Colombia drug barons have said they were going to step up their war against the politicians and the industrial leaders. What is your take on that situation? I mean, why is it so out of control?
Well, my take on the whole Colombian situation is it's being presented to America in a very fraudulent manner. The American public is being told that there is a war against drugs in Colombia, when in fact what it is a war against violent drug dealers. President Virgilio Barco of Colombia is much too smart to go to war against drugs because the sale of cocaine is more than 50% of his country's income. The proof of it, I think, is in, and you hear it when Commissioner of Customs Von Raab resigned from his post angrily, and he wrote to President Bush, third world banking schemes are more important than winning a drug war. Now,
what that means is
the Andean nations that sell all the cocaine in the world have a combined international debt of $42 billion, of which most of that payment, the interest payments, come from the sale of cocaine. So you've got a very powerful faction, the bankers of this world, particularly the bankers of the United States, who really don't want to win a drug war. In Deep Cover, one of the purposes of writing Deep Cover and covering this case, Operation Trifecta, was to capture in microcosm what a total fraud this drug war is from bottom to top.
Well, where is the U.S. culpable here?
I had a brother who was a heroin addict for 19 years. He finally killed himself in 1977, writing a letter, "My family and friends, I'm sorry, I can't stand the drugs anymore." He'd been through 5 rehabilitation programs. I was transferred a year later to South America. I'd become an undercover expert. I was teaching undercover to other agencies and other professional lawmen. I did what I was trained to do. When I got to South America, I started working my way upward through cocaine cartels until I reached the top. When I reached the top, what I found was that the top drug dealers in this world have better protection with our CIA, our Pentagon, our politicians, our special interests than any DEA agent in the world.
What do you mean by that? You mean our government is in collusion with them actively?
Or? Absolutely. And very, very actively so. What I'm saying is I'm going to give you enough real facts that if our elected officials are really interested in getting to the truth about this drug war, whether we're really in it for real or whether the whole thing is really a sham and a smoke and mirror show, I have given them more than enough in this book to start calling these people forward and questioning them as to the statements they made and the acts that I described as to whether they really did it or they didn't, and if they did, why we gave up the drug war in favor of a war against communism. In fact, we made a conscious choice that the hell with the children, the people of the United States, we're at war against communism. Sure. Now it's become a lot more sinister than that. Yes, and now you have events like the one captured in Vanity Fair, where a man named Molina Osorio comes into Texas, sells 2 kilos of cocaine to an undercover DEA agent. In a closed-door hearing, the CIA manages to get him removed from the American judicial system. The minutes of whatever happened are a secret. The investigative reporter follows it up. He finds out that the DEA agent in Honduras had documented 50 tons of cocaine a year coming into the U.S. at the hands of U.S.-supported Contras and Honduran military. And what does DEA do? They transfer the agent out of Honduras to get him out of the hair of the Pentagon. Now, what's happening is, using the same logic that we're at war against drugs, we invade Panama, 23 Americans die, from 400 to 6,000 innocent Panamanians die for the arrest of one drug dealer, yet in Honduras, they are given a license to peddle cocaine to the United States, and that's a fraud and that's a sham.
When I interviewed the head of the DEA, John Lawn, who at the point of his retirement...
Yeah, that's where the interview gets pink, and they deal with this other guy, and they bring on 2 other men who, kind of knock this guy down. Mike, you ready, Mike? Yeah. Mike said to me as he heard this, as he started to hear this. So Mike now has shifted over to Kent's position. Kent has become guest. We've done a tetrad on the fourth year. We flipped the fourth year process pattern already. Mike, I'm not sure if he really liked being... he liked it. But no, you would have stayed here if Kent hadn't requested to come over here.
Yeah.
So all production kudos go to Mike from this point on, right?
Oh, all right. Sure.
You might
be
able to notice
an increase in the...
Years of it now.
So that interview was April 23rd, 1990, McNeil Lehrer. That's a major thing. And Mike says to me as he's listening, he says, "This guy's dead. This guy's dead." Now, that's a good point, Mike, because if he doesn't get killed, then he obviously represents a faction and he's protected. I mean, Skolnick said he would never go on to a national program, NBC, CBS, I don't know about PBS, but anything national like that. He wouldn't go in any of their studios unless he was in a tank. So a character like this can get on and do this. And his new book, Deep Cover, I've seen it over at Lichtman's at the Atrium on the Bay, if you want to get it. But it's interesting that this guy comes out and exposes the Pentagon. This could relate to the Trump matter. But we got a call.
We do. Hello, CKLN. Hello?
It's a quiet caller again.
They probably don't know the rules, the rules about...
turning up their radio.
Having to listen to the radio.
No, I think that person's consciously doing it. They did it twice last week.
No, Dixie, let's try it again.
Yeah.
Hello? We've got another caller. Hello. Hi, Kellen.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. This idea of the woman's corner, it sort of has an aura to it. Like maybe you could kind of get an Ann Landers column in there, and maybe you put the astrology in there, and, paper doily ideas for the picnic. I think it's a wonderful idea. It would look good in the Globe and Mail in 1951. I think it's an excellent idea, the woman's corner.
Wait. Are you knocking the idea? It's a cynical tone.
Well,
in your voice.
As a woman, I mean, in the last 20 years, I mean, I'm speaking you man to woman, Bob. After the last 20 years of you know, ghettoization of women's interests, you know, that rhubarb recipe, it made my mouth water hearing about it. But the context, I mean, you know, a one-time leader of the Ontario NDP got lost his office because he was holding up jars of jam on the NDP commercials on TV, and it looked like ghettoization to the more militant women NDP members. So, but maybe you may think about it that the women's section does have Ann Landers, who helps people with problems. And,
but Ada, I would suggest this for quick pattern recognition, that we don't have to have a goal or a program or ideological situation as women anymore. The changes have come and gone. Now we can replay all paths. So I think that caller was a true subgenius woman, because she had no fear to present that part of woman's history, woman's experience. As a replay, you know, we can do anything now. We don't have to be geared towards somebody's program anymore. You can be any kind of fool you want to be from any point in history.
So it truly is, we're back to post-feminism, post-industrialism.
Post-cyberpunk, post-postmodern, post-Bob even. Even post-Bob.
Post-Bob.
I think we better let Eddie go on that one. Did you hear the way he said post-Bob?
I think there's a stunned silence. Yeah.
Where'd they go, Eddie?
This Women's Corner, I think maybe that could be the theme, not tonight necessarily, but people could accumulate recipes and ideas and share them with us as we go along. So but it did hit a tone, I think.
Yeah, I think, the tone is it allowed Eddie to understand a new level of Bob that he never experienced before, that we're not living in the 1980s or 90s or 60s, 70s. Bob is all times. All subgeniuses are all times. We can be any culture, any pink phase we want to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could even be what? You could be a coal miner's daughter if you want to, right?
Going back to that caller who was concerned about your life.
Yeah, the paranoid.
Yes, yeah. And wasn't it Bob who once said, "Give me slack or kill me"?
Yes.
And I think that sums it up.
And this person probably doesn't know my history. I infiltrated the most dangerous areas of secret government activity from the middle of World War II. It's frightening to say, at the middle of World War II until the 1670s when I got to higher echelons where I had my own army protecting me. But I went through, incredible paranoid situations and dangerous situations. You know, makes James Bond look like Mike Dyer's life, you know, and Kent's life. And our new guest here, Charlie, you know, a friend of Jerry Belanger. Any of you pinks around me, you know, it makes James Bond look like your lives, But what I went through, as a matter of fact, I've died so many times in the Tim Leary metaphorical mode, you know, many ego deaths and many resurrections. So I can't remember what death is, and I certainly am assuming I'm already dead and in heaven now. And Mike, I have to say, you help it happen. You help me make feel I am in heaven now. I'm in heaven, so I died a long time ago.
Well, there aren't any calls right now. Kent, do you have a comment?
Kent has a topic, I think.
Yeah, Donald Trump. I'm just a little curious here as to what you did with his money.
Well, it goes back to the thesis that Gorbachev and the Rockefeller faction, designed by Bush, are out to get the Bolsheviks and kick them out of North America. And this has been going on for several years now. And the Bolshevik grouping is reorganizing in Germany and reunifying Germany and setting up the Holy Roman Empire. Therefore, the heavy Bolshevik network, headquartered in Toronto, as exposed by Robert O'Driscoll in his poem NATO and the Warsaw Pact Are One. He points out that the beast, the Catholic beast, the Vatican beast, the Holy Roman Empire beast, is centered around five families in Canada. Well, that's the Bolshevik control that's traditionally been through Canada. And you have this surfacing really strongly with the collapse of the Campo Empire. Mm-hmm. Now, Campo goes down, that affects the Reichmans, and Donald Trump is affected by that because he was a figure, he was the businessman, a celebrity, when you had the hot media doing a Baroque spiral through the 80s as a retrieval versus the cool media spiral. Baroque spiral in the 60s. Donald Trump is pointed out in Spy magazine using Skolnick's information. Did you read the whole Spy article?
Yes.
Remember, Skolnick says that Trump is a Rockefeller man.
Yes.
Now, it's true that Trump got his first loan from Chase Manhattan back in the 70s, a long time ago. But that's when the Rockefellers controlled Chase Manhattan. But if you know Dr. Beter's information...
Do you know why the Chase Manhattan Bank is now in... they're restructuring to get away from filing under Chapter 11.
Yeah. See, there's all kinds of changes going on in Chase Manhattan. It was Rockefeller-controlled up till the late 70s. Then when the Bolsheviks were kicked out of Russia, that part of it, and they knocked off the Rockefellers in 79, they took over the Chase Manhattan thing, and they got Volcker to raise the interest rates to plunder the Rockefeller empire. So you had a lot of the Rockefeller-controlled entities, like Trump, working for the Bolsheviks, probably murdered and replaced by doubles or robotoids. So we don't even know if Trump is the original Trump. And it's interesting that his wife, who could be an intelligence control agent, leaves just when the plug is being pulled on him, right? So, but what this Bolshevik gang is now having to deal with the Rockefeller-Russian alliance, the Russian Skopsy-Gorby faction, so that the Bolsheviks, they still control the Pentagon, they run the dope incorporated situation there, but they're being exposed by this guy. Now, Mike, you said that Michael Levine's dead. He's a dead... Did we already mention that?
Yeah.
Mike said that this Michael Levine, just heard on PBS, he's dead. You know, that guy's going to be off. Well, if he doesn't die, then he's protected, and he represents a faction, probably the Rockefeller faction, the Bush-Gorbian thing, giving him good coverage, good publication of stuff that Mabe Russell and LaRouche and everybody exposed years ago. Now it comes out in official pink press. If he stays alive, then he's protected, and it's an attempt to put the burden of public scrutiny on the Pentagon. Now, you notice George Bush more and more cuts the Pentagon budget. So Trump is weakened. The Bolsheviks are weakened, they retrench in Europe, and that's why they had to reunite Europe and reunite the East and Western blocs, and they're going to bring back the Habsburg Holy Roman Empire. So, I think that answers your question. Trump was Rockefeller, he then was Bolshevik-controlled in the 80s, and now he has to get out of America. But he will be able to limp along a little bit. But just by telling what's happening to Trump via the major media, that ruins his media credibility. That ruins his... you can be killed instantly in the media in that sense, right? His credit rating goes down. Everybody will back off. As a matter of fact, the media, the major media news, is like code for who to stay away from and who to join up with.
We do have a call, okay. Bob. You are listening to CKLN, the Church of the Subgenius Show. Hello.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hello. Are we going to have a messiah?
I think you're on the greatest hits tape. You asked about, didn't you originally call in and say, Bob's religion, this church could not take it because we don't have a pink mass media form of bias?
I'm being confused with
that. All right, you sound very much like that person. All right, well, are we going to have a messiah?
Well, the word is this being named Maitreya.
Yeah. What's his name? Benjamin Creams.
Benjamin Creams travels around, yeah.
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 You want to comment on that?
Well, the last I heard was that he's planning on coming out after the Tokyo stock market goes. And he has been spending the last 10 years talking to media people and doing whatever miracle they need to see, and he's waiting for the day. So.
Yeah, now I think the symbolism... You still there, caller?
Yeah.
The symbolism of the Tokyo stock market going is that the Tokyo Sony originally was a Rockefeller operation. Many subgenius know the fact that Sony stood for Standard Oil of New York, one of Rockefeller's earlier companies back in the early part of the 20th century. So Sony was Rockefeller-controlled from under Solar government conditions from 1945 on, the whole Japanese enterprise. Now, the Bolsheviks took over the Rockefeller situation. They started to militarize Japan in the 80s. So Japan is Rockefeller-controlled, but in the 80s, Bolshevik-controlled. And then we have the weakening of Bolsheviks as they're forced to retrench into Europe. And that's why you're having trouble in Japan the past year or two as a result of what's going on in Europe. All right? So, yes. Now, yes, Tokyo goes down. All right? Stock market goes.
Okay, it does.
Then you bring on the Holy Roman Empire Antichrist, the Messiah, which will be an Antichrist. It will be an anti-Bob. And that'll come out of Europe.
He's living in London.
Yeah, it'll be a European operation. There's every faction is in London. That's why you have the Queen fighting Margaret Thatcher.
So why is it a conflict between... what you describe as Bob.
A conflict with Bob?
Yeah.
Because Bob is post-Antichrist and post-Christ. Mike laughs at that. We don't know if Mike's paying attention. But
he broke the microphone. So
Mike's having his own conflict.
No, I'm laughing at that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who's Antichrist?
I have no idea why you would laugh at that, Mike. I mean, you are a convert to my ways. I think you would understand that.
Continue.
Yeah, okay. So,
well, this guy's supposed to be an enlightened being. I mean, how could you be against that?
Who's the Antichrist and the Enlightened Being?
No, well, this is my trade of character. Yeah.
No, come on. He's not, you know why he's not going to be enlightened? First of all, he's going to be in human form.
Well, he does that. He does that by choice. He's not on the karmic wheel. He just comes down once every age, right?
Well, have you heard my dogma about the discarnate state and the electric coming, the electric second coming under electric conditions?
No.
Yeah. What do you think, Mike? We've been talking about it for 3 years.
How could we give this? Last month.
That's true. Yeah, you've only started listening the last month.
Three shows. Yeah.
A summary. Yeah.
All right, Mike. Could you give me a hand here? How could we explain that the electric coming, the electric second coming, the Finnegan awake situation, is post any anthropomorphic cultural or advertisement for a human figure?
Yeah, but don't you think this guy comes on the news? I mean, apparently he's already been interviewed by CNN, but they didn't play it. He comes on all the stations. What's going to go down? I mean, how's that going to affect what you're describing?
Okay, what I'm describing is the form of Christ and the Antichrist together, which we call tactility, and it has no content. The human image of Matryar, who is going to be all kinds of antichrist and false Christ and false Bobs, and they'll be anthropomorphic and human focused, so that you will have someone to look at. With Bob, you can't look at him; you can just feel it, and that's why he chose the radio medium. So you wouldn't be able to visualize Bob. Any visualization will be a failure because you can't focus and have a centralized image under electric discarnate, decentralized, multi-consciousness situation.
Yeah, but form is emptiness; they're one and the same.
No.
Sure.
Do you mean by emptiness a resonating, vibrating, pulsating, systole, diastole, like a heart situation?
I'm just saying the Buddhist dogma that whatever manifests because there's an unmanifested part to begin with.
Most people think of the unmanifested part as an empty void, and that's the product of visual space. Now, Buddhism.
Yeah, that's not true, right?
No, that's not true. Buddhism, Christianity, Islam, they all come out of the manuscript tradition, which is based on writing. There's a difference between the Western written tradition and the ideogrammic Eastern written tradition, but they're both writing, therefore emphasizing the eye, therefore abstracting out of the tactile condition, and therefore creating a void and form, emptiness form dialectic, which has been well bypassed by the interpenetrating effect of the electric environment. So we can't cite the Buddhist, the Christians, the Judaic tradition, or Islam, Sikh, whatever.
Yeah, but the consciousness that they're describing is interpenetrating.
That's right, but their means of describing it is verbal, written, mm-hmm. or gesture.
Also, get this point.
No, you want to get the new dogma. All of those forms of communication and styles are not electrically tactile. You can only get the effect of the new second coming by resonating under the electric church. Not the industrial church, as Stang calls it, the electric church. The electrification of you on the phone with me, sharing the same space, interpenetrating, resonating, using verbality to jam with, is the only way you can express the true second coming, which has happened.
That's how someone gets enlightened, is a direct mind-to-mind transmission from the guru.
Yeah,
right.
Not a from. It's a interplay. We don't know which is the guru in this conversation, you or me.
Right.
And also, it's not mind to mind. That's a body reference point. We are beyond our minds and beyond any part of your physical or psychic apparatus. We are something. We are communicating now in the same resonating spot. We do not have identity. You are as much me as I am as you.
Yeah, and whatever blocks I'm experiencing are also manifest in my body.
Yeah, and healthy.
You can't knock the body, though. That's ridiculous.
We're not knocking it. We're just talking about where the body went. And I do advocate a media fast to bring back the body. And that's why the Maitreya and these guys will communicate on the media being content and won't know that they have to communicate around the electric environment. And the only way to do that is to turn it off. So my platform bypasses anything in the Book of Revelations. It's never been done or thought of before. Right. Turn off the electric environment, only temporarily, so that we can fall asleep again and be human.
What does that mean exactly?
I'll say it again, so that we can fall asleep and be human. In other words, if we turn off the electric environment, then we wouldn't be extended in a discarnate situation. Therefore, we'd be back in our bodies. We would not be in this new nature. We'd be in what we call the old nature.
having absorbed all the
having
the
had the experience. We could have the meaning by turning off the electric environment.
Now, I'm not sure what that all arrives to, but that's okay.
Well, what you do is, it is okay, but what you do is that we then realize where we were, what we experienced, and then when we turned it off, we then, having realized that, turn it back on. Only at appropriate times and as a form of celebration. In other words, we can collectively, now this is where we collectively have ESP, a complex clairvoyance where we all decide at the right time to turn on the electric environment and share it for a certain span of time.
That could be 2012.
Yeah. Did you leave that message?
Yep.
Ah, okay. That was, what do you think of my idea that you brought up Zappa, and that's 22 years from now?
Yeah, and his birthday's that day. I had no idea of that either.
Oh, so I thought someone pointed that out. But
I
no,
didn't know it.
Yeah, his birthday is that day.
That's great.
So he'll be 72.
He'll be 72.
Yeah, he was born in 1940, so he'll be 72. What is that? That's 236s. That's 3 and 6 is 9. That's 2 9s. That could be what Gretzky moved to Los Angeles, right, to be near Frank. The 2 9 thing. Yeah, that's pattern recognition.
But Mike.
Yes.
Did you hear that Beefheart cover band?
No. You're kidding.
That was me. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, didn't hear it.
What do you
mean? I put it in your file.
Oh, that's what that is.
Yeah, yeah.
Jeez. You got to leave a note or something, you know?
Well, I left the note at the beginning, like, verbally.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, then I haven't heard it all. I honestly thought it was a mistake. I thought someone put it in the wrong file.
Oh, no. That was for you.
Now I will listen to it.
Okay.
Thanks.
Mike, did you hear this caller's message about Beefheart being Secretary of State under Zappa conditions?
No, I...
You missed that one.
Well, the reception in the van wasn't that great. So
yeah, that was a clever message. Is he was relating the harmonic Bob Vergent to... did you leave a message... did you call in last show about...
Arguez.
Yeah. No, Arguez was the one credited with the harmonic Bob Vergent.
Yeah.
Yeah, you...
But
you,
I was down there at the time, and there were people saying he was... That was immediate thing for him. That he didn't originally discover the Mayan thing. Somebody else did.
No, that was sort of known by scholars.
Yeah,
but he's the
yeah.
one who promoted it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
As well as Earth Day.
But apparently he was doing a bit of coke, little grandiose visions there.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had a rough time. And then his son actually died in a car accident.
We ever read after the Bob Vergent?
Just after, yeah.
Ooh.
And then that's why he wrote The Surfers of his next book, whatever that was.
Yeah. The William Irwin Thompson puts down both LaRouche and Arguez. If you want to check out his new book, The Imaginary Landscape, maybe William Irwin Thompson can explain why he got the bad karma. Arguez got the bad karma or good karma, you know, depending on where you are, of his son dying. But check out William Irwin Thompson's little run-through on put-down of Arguez, even though Thompson is a heavy propagandist for the Gnostic Aquarian conspiracy. Why would he distinguish himself from Arguez? That's interesting.
Mm.
I think it's basically because it's focused on a time zone, on a particular date, and that's really not electric sensibility. And Thompson was well influenced by McLuhan, but he doesn't fully acknowledge it in the way he should. He does it in passing. Well, knocking McLuhan too, but it's you can read William Irwin Thompson to see the real meaning of McLuhan, and then you can drop Thompson and go to McLuhan, because McLuhan is the prophet of the electric second coming.
Right.
He was, you know, he's like one of the John the Baptist for Bob. I don't know. You're a Canadian.
Whatever's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, on we go.
Night.
Night.
That's interesting because I've always had this real fascination with the phenomena of tribute or cover bands.
Oh, yeah?
There's this great wide scope of tribute bands who play up at, you know, the gas works and at festivals all across Canada, and they're hugely popular. And so to hear that there's a Captain Beefheart. Yeah, and I apologize, but this tape was just left in my folder, and I just saw the sort of listing of songs, and I recognized some of the titles, and I thought, well, this must be a mistake. I was going to return it.
And then, how would you return it? Where would you?
Well, I mean, just bring it in and say, look, David.
Oh, I see. Wrong place. Yeah.
So I'll go back and listen to it now.
Yeah, you know what you're going to say, but it's interesting that you just aren't connected to Beefheart because you couldn't hear that message. You got static coming out of your car,
you see?
It's
went over a bump or something.
Yeah, and because Mike wasn't ready to hear that. Okay.
Well, you mentioned practicing the media ecology. If you turn off the media or the medium,
the electric medium.
Does it still not, can you ever sever yourself totally? I mean, does it still not resonate within your body, even though it's turned off or you're avoiding it or you're practicing that form of ecology?
It resonates in memory. Mm-hmm. It's like waking up from a dream. See, that's how we'd wake up, because we would be able to get out of the form of living in it, and therefore we have the experience and the meaning. The meaning is a way of replaying it in memory or a detached state. We can't get detached from it. Now, if we can't turn off the electric environment, we could turn off television, therefore changing the particular effect of TV, turn off computers, but we could keep radio on. And radio could be the electric implosion, but have a different sensibility. But I don't think that would accomplish the total turn-off. So when we are fully comfortable with death, when we collectively are comfortable with death, we will allow ourselves to be amputated consciously by turning off the electric environment. This will be discussed in the world government, forums and parliaments, right? And they'll have a referendum on it. And the results of the referendum will not be published by numerical form, like 90% say yes, 10% say no. You will not hear the results, and you'll know the yes vote won, because the electric environment will be turned off. That will be the product of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, we could merge the computers so that they would be susceptible to a vote like that and automatically shut off the whole electric environment, which the beast will do and implode into a computerized one big beast kind of computer, will control the whole satellite, mixed media, TV, radio environment. Then, if a computer receives the instruction to turn off, it'll be turned off. But then we put a Bob failsafe thing in to turn it back on at a certain point. So that is the most amazing art event that would ever happen. It would make Picasso, Marcel Duchamp, John Cage, Shockabilly, Leonardo da Vinci, everybody look pretty puny compared to that. Mm-hmm. It'd be a collective clairvoyance and a collective shared experience.
Now, I came in late tonight. Were there any other tapes that I should be lining up to play other than the theme outro? Hairspray.
That'll be the hymn, and I don't think there's any others.
Okay.
There's just that and the thing. So, we have no calls.
Not right now. We could throw out the phone number again. It's 595-1478. You're listening to CKLN 88.1. We have, what do we have in terms of CKLN events coming up? We've got our annual street crawl.
Yeah. Pub crawl?
Coming up, yeah. To raise more money for something, and that's coming up July 12th. Oh, and we also have that week, and I mention this only because I don't think I'm going to be here.